This is the Daily Blip, and I'm Scott Johnson. So many of you are like me in that you loved F-Zero back in the day, back in the Super Nintendo days. And then later you may have graduated when the PlayStation came out with the Wipeout games from the now defunct Psygnosis developer. And if you're like me, you loved those games. You loved the idea of hover cars racing in a futuristic competition where only one would stand a victor at the end, right? There was something about this sort of futuristic take on speed and design and, power-ups and how to destroy your enemies and the sense of future that seemed to be present in that game, in those games, I guess. And I've got some great news for you for what I believe to be a relatively less expensive or inexpensive price. You can get that thrill again on your Nintendo Switch. Now, they had a game previous to this release on the Wii U, and that was fine. I guess I should tell you the name of the game. It's Fast RMX, Fast RMX. Now, I think the first one was just RMX, or maybe I don't know that. I actually don't know what the original name was, but Fast RMX is a game that is basically everything that came with what the Wii U version had, but then some additional stuff, some tracks, some cars, that sort of thing. And it is the spinning image, visually anyway, of a Wipeout game. The hover cars are very reminiscent of what Wipeout looks like. You could almost call it a ripoff in that way, visually speaking. The tracks are big and awesome and intricate and cool. And that's where the similarities sort of end, though, for the Wipeout side. It actually takes a little more inspiration from something. Well, okay, so tonally it feels like a Sega game. It's got an announcer that's like, Fast RMX, you're the winner, this kind of stuff. It's not that cool sort of techno trippy Android future, right? At least that's not what they're portraying. And the music's a little more, I don't know, a little J-poppy, which is fine, but really a different tone. And then there's a couple of gameplay twists that remind me of Mario Kart. Instead of picking up abilities on the track that you then use to shoot somebody or whatever, instead you're picking up these little orbs. And these orbs, depending on what color your jet is at the moment, I'll get to that in a second, give you boost power so you can have more boost during your run on the track. And it's not easy. These AI opponents are rough. There's also a multiplayer mode. I've not played that yet, but in order to combat that, you need to be able to get as much boost as you can and then spend that boost, which you use with the right trigger. Anyway, also, there's once in a while a big stripe of color, and if you hit that with the right jet color chosen for your ship, you'll get a speed boost. If you don't, you get slowed down and you lose your boost. It zaps your boost. So it's an interesting gameplay twist that you need to sort of be paying attention to. You continually hit that X key when you see something coming up where you need to switch to that color. And it's just between this orange and blue. So there's not like, you know, a bunch of other colors you have to cycle through. It's one or the other, on or off, basically. And if you time that right and do that right, you're in good shape. If you don't, sometimes you're going to hit a jump pad type place that if you don't have the right color, you're not going to make it to the next level or to the next part of the track, and you're going to die and you're going to probably lose the game because now you're going to be far behind everybody. So that's interesting. But the Mario Kart part comes in, and the way the tracks are sort of structured and the way that the wins are structured. So you start into a cup and you play three tracks. And at the end of those three tracks, somebody's awarded the winner. And when you do that, it unlocks another set of three tracks. And there are three speed levels, kind of like the, 50, 100 and 150 cc stuff in Mario Kart. It's very similar to that. It's really that simple. There's a ton of content, though, within that structure that I've just described. And it's absolutely worth the $20 they're asking. I cannot stress that enough. If you like those kinds of games, it's stupid dumb not to pick this up. $19.99. So there's my little mini review today. We'll be later later with more of the Daily Blip. We got some news for you. So if you're starved for some news, I got something that'll solve your starvation. I've got a big thick meal of news is what I'm trying to say. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you later for that. Well, hello and welcome to the Daily Blip. Hey guys, here on the Daily Blip today, I'm going to cover some news. How do you feel about that? I don't know if you guys were aware of this, but that Dungeons & Dragons app? Have you heard of this? Please tell me you've heard of this, because this is about as the most exciting news I've heard in a long time when it comes to the tabletop world crossing over into our digital world. The venerable Dungeons & Dragons tabletop board playing game. Is that what we'd call it? Let's call it role playing game, because board playing game is wrong. they're partnering with Curse to build a next generation web app, and the platform is called D&D Beyond. It was shown at PAX East last week in Boston, and they're signing up for betas right now. And it's interesting that Curse got this deal. You all know Curse as, you know, folks behind managing mods for World of Warcraft and Minecraft. They own a number of sites that support various games. MMO Champion, to be specific, is one of them. One that you may know. And Curse, being purchased by Twitch recently, has brought a very interesting push to all of what Curse was about before, what Twitch is about now, and what D&D might be in the future. It will be accessible on virtually any device that includes smartphones, tablets, computers, whatever. It will include rules found in source books, character builder, digital character sheets, and a whole lot more. There's a very good chance that the bestiary will show up in there at some point for D&D fans. At least I would hope so. And it allows users to get official D&D content, but in smaller parcels than those commonly found in some existing stuff. This is reported by Polygon. If you've used Fantasy Grounds or Roll20, you'll know what those are. They already sort of do this thing, but now we have some officialness to it. Project lead Adam Bradford says on Reddit, if you only play fighters, you'll be able to just pick up a staff you need to track swinging and giant two-hand swords. That is not a microtransaction model. We aren't forcing anyone to buy the content in small chunks. It can still be bought all at once. It's all just flexibility. So it sounds like you can piecemeal or buy it all at once. Bottom line is, if you were excited about what your next D&D session might look like, I got good news for you. It might look like that. And finally, everybody in the room, well, especially DMs. DMs can look around the room and say, half my guys are on their phones, and not be pissed and tell you to get off them. He might want you on your phones. Let that sink in a little bit. All right, that's going to do it for today. Thank you guys for listening. If you have any thoughts or comments, send them to scott@frogpants.com. I'd be happy to answer them or even talk about them on the next set of Daily Blips. Every day, 7 days a week. So come on back for that. I'll see you next time. This is Scott Johnson, and this is the Daily Blip. You big Blizzard fan? I am. Always have been. Probably always will be. Big changes coming to Lucio. If you're a fan of Overwatch, this is interesting to you. If you're not, well, maybe stay tuned for some other stories today, but Overwatch game director Jeff Kaplan mentioned earlier in this week in a Reddit AMA, apparently this was not a planned one, kind of an impromptu one, said that Blizzard has some changes in mind for the support hero Lucio. Turns out we'll see those changes sooner rather than later. Whatever that means. Probably on the PTR this week. He says this, Lucio has often felt like a must pick due to his raw healing output and the versatility of providing a speed bonus to your entire team. I can say that that is true. The goal of these changes is to keep with those elements and keep those feelings strong, but making them harder to apply to everyone on your team all at once. Uh-oh, that sounds like a nerf. So here are the big changes. Mainly, comes to Lucio's crossfade ability. This is what his shift function does, unless you change your keys around. The song's area of effect radius has been decreased from 30 to 10 meters. That is a much smaller, well, that's cut down by 2/3, isn't it? anyway, to compensate for his decrease in radius, the healing per second of Heal Song, which is the other form of crossfade, has been increased by 50%, and both under regular and amped up circumstances. All right? So There's a visible aura when you do this. That's the important change here. It used to be you just sort of figured you were in his range. Now it behaves the way it behaves in Heroes of the Storm. If you played Lucio in Heroes of the Storm, again, you'll know what I'm talking about. If not, I'll explain it. But there's sort of a halo effect around him. When you're in speed boost mode, when using crossfade, you will see a big green ring around him that is 10 meters in diameter. And when he is healing, you'll see a yellow ring around him that is also 10 meters in diameter. So, yeah, big changes. You're not only going to be able to see his passives, but they're going to be a little smaller. Feels like a pretty good trade-off. Doesn't seem so bad. Lastly, Lucio's primary weapon, Sonic Amplifier, has had the projectile speed increased from 40 to 50. Its alternative fire, affectionately referred to as simply as the Boop, some are calling it that. Anyway, also now considers vertical orientation when knocking targets back. So you can now bump up, not just forward and back, which seems interesting in certain vertically challenged areas. Anyway, this is fairly major, and they're not changing the core of who the character is, and that's good, but it's enough of a change to make a few players out there wonder if, well, maybe I should try some other healers. Or maybe you're thinking, finally, I'll play Lucio more because this is more my speed. This is more what I want out of that guy. One way or the other, I'll be back later with more from the Daily Blip. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Scott at frogpants.com if you have questions. See you soon. This is the Daily Blip, and I'm Scott Johnson. Horizon Zero Dawn came at a funny time, right? Hit the PlayStation 4 with a lot of excitement and anticipation and hype behind that game. A lot of people were stoked about Sony's newest first-party original IP. But it just so happened to come out the same week as, a little game called Zelda, or Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Not sure that did that game any favors. It's a great game. I'm playing both. Right now I'm actually playing a little more Zero Dawn, taking a break from Zelda, and I really like it. Well, I have some good news. Sales numbers are in. Would you guys like to know how Horizon Zero Dawn sold since its release? As of March 16th, that's a little ways away now, so I guess sales could potentially still be building. Horizon Zero Dawn has sold 2.6 million units. That's worldwide. And was released globally, I guess, February 28th. That seems like forever ago now. I guess it wasn't really. Pretty much universally praised. I haven't read a bad review for it. And impressed most gamers and critics alike, I would say. But now represents the best-selling first-party new IP, first launch-party new IP of this generation of the PS4. Now, I don't know how that compares historically to PS3 or PS2 or anything else, but as far as it being, and there's a lot of caveats there, first-party, brand-new IP, not a sequel, and coming out in its generation, it now currently holds the record. So I don't know what was close to that previous to this, but there you have it. This is what Sean Layden, chairman of SIE Worldwide Studios, says about Guerrilla's creation. Quote, "We knew Horizon Zero Dawn was going to be something special, so to see its incredible critical reaction out in the world to a brand new game world translates into this level of sales is very gratifying. Guerrilla has created a game that is nothing short of exceptional. And the reaction we have seen from fans from hours and hours of gameplay streaming to endless photo sharing so shows just how impactful it's been." Unquote. They did go on to say that they are thrilled that Zero Dawn has been embraced by both players and critics alike, and that developing the game was a labor of love, and so extremely satisfying to see that it elicits, quote, passion and enthusiasm from the gaming public. That's Guerrilla's managing director, Herman Holst. Says this is the only the beginning of Aloy's story. And our exploration of the world of Horizon Zero Dawn, with the team already hard at work on the expansion to the story. So you get two things there. Announcement of great sales and guess what? Expansion coming. Who would have thunk it? Well, I would have thunk it, of course. It was very successful, and that game deserves to get more. So I predict a long life for this series. I don't think this will be the first, nor the last. I do want to add one bit here before I sew this up. Guerrilla's most famous for their shooter series before this that was, it was all right. It was controversial in that it was some of the best graphics on the system. Back in the PS2 days, they showed a trailer that was a PS3. They claimed it was real footage, but then later it was, turned out to be a render. The game is slipping my mind right now. Why can't I think of the name of the game? Anyway, half of you are yelling it into your listening devices right now. Yelling at the Anchor app. Don't blame the app. Blame me for not remembering the name of the games. But anyway, those games were high on production value, kind of low on gameplay, and they've turned it around completely and made something pretty exceptional. It's right up there with my top three games of the year so far in 2017, and it should be on yours as well. Go give it a look. Horizon Zero Dawn, congratulations on your sales. This has been the Daily Blip. We'll be back later with more. Come on back. This is the Daily Blip, and I am Scott Johnson. All right, you guys, it's finally happened. In the world of gaming, it has finally happened. A Malaysian university just offered a course on how to be good at Dota 2. All right, guys, get ready for your late night studies, study groups. Get your Red Bull out. Do not take illicit drugs, all right? But if you think you suck at Dota 2, there's a new way for you to learn it. And the University of Technology and Innovation in Malaysia may well be your next stop in learning Dota 2, as the course is actually aimed on how to be good at Valve's competitive MOBA title. It's an actual academic path, or at least for APU, as they offer a total of 36 weeks of training and development that is aimed at you becoming the next great Dota player. Course is divided into three levels: beginner, intermediate, and advanced. And each requires a certain amount of MMR, so you can't just get in there as a total noob. You need to be pretty good. And according to the Pacific Network, it is open to students age 13 and above. So you can be 13 years old, as young as 13, and older. And, of course, if you're 13, you need parental consent. That makes sense, right? But, how many parents haven't thought, hey, my kid could be the next Dota legend. Why not? Why not support little Jimmy and his path to greatness? Anyway, Dota 2 has become huge in Malaysia in the last couple of years. And they've got some pretty iconic players, such as Yamata and Chuan. I don't think I'm saying these names right. Mushi, you know these names. So why not bring some more? Why not home grow them, they figure. They say it was part of their academic program, or part of this academic program, because they really wanted to do it, but got mixed reception from both players and parents. And hey, if you're in Malaysia and you're hell-bent on learning the game of Dota 2 in a way that will, I don't know, give you truly an advantage next time you're fighting in that game, I guess. I mean, go to school for it. That's what this says. You can go to school and learn how to play Dota 2. Why wouldn't you want to do that? Email me your other ideas. What other games should be part of the curriculum at your various universities, both far and wide? What should it be? Should I be able to get a portal degree? Can I get a minor in roguelikes and major in open world GTA 5 things? Where does the line end? It doesn't end. That's the deal. Email me, scott@frogpants.com. This has been the Daily Blip. We'll be back later with more. See you then. This is Scott Johnson with The Daily Blip. So, at the end of last year, there was a rumor floating around, and we all thought we were going to hear about this at BlizzCon, and it didn't happen. But there was a rumor floating around that there would be an HD update to Blizzard's all-time great sci-fi RTS StarCraft and Brood War. The original StarCraft I'm talking about, that it was in the works, that it was going to be announced sometime in September or November, maybe October. They never declined or confirmed the report. So all they would say is, we have no announcements at this time. But those months came and went. There was nothing. No appearances, no announcements, no anything. But the story surfaced again, this time on a Korean esports site called Sports Seoul. And they reported yesterday that StarCraft Remastered is in the works and is, quote, expected to be ready for release in May or June. The report says an official announcement could actually be made as soon as next week. That is kind of intense, because let me tell you something. I like me some StarCraft 2. I'm not going to poo-poo it. I never will. I think StarCraft 2 is great. But there's something about StarCraft 1. There's something special there. And I think two things have to happen to make this a huge success. All right. Number one, StarCraft Remastered HD, whatever you're going to call it, needs to come out sometime soon. I think the StarCraft scene could use a real boost. I think Blizzard needs to be prepared that, number two, they need to be prepared for the idea that the HD / updated version of the game might eclipse two. It might actually make two impotent and no longer part of the competitive scene. I'm not saying people won't play it for its campaigns or, you know, general audience play, but as far as the competitive scene goes, I predict they adopt Brood War back into the fold, and that becomes the game you play. All right, that might be a little out there on the predictions, but I'm going to stick with it for now. And the third thing they have to do is they do need to put in a few things that quality of life improvements that StarCraft II and other games in the genre brought, and that you could find in StarCraft II now, like how many units you can select at once. Shortcut keys, pathing, the kind of stuff that the game really benefits from in a modern sense that were kind of a pain back then, but you accepted it because it was 1998 and that was the best you had. So if those three things happen, we are looking at a huge resurgence of StarCraft interest, I believe. And I know I'm all up in this. The best part about it is that it will look good, and that's maybe the number one thing, is it will look cool. I don't care if it's still, you know, who cares if it's sprites and stuff. That stuff looked great in the day. Gameplay is everything in that game. So I'm pretty excited. May or June, get ready. That's sooner than you think it is, don't you think? I mean, that's sooner than you think it is. It's sooner than I was thinking it would be. Like, that seems like tomorrow. It was all done through a Google Translate of a site, of this sports site, of this Korean site. And as believable as it all sounds, it still leaves some people doubtful. Some say that there have been conspiracy theories for years about StarCraft coming back, and that, you know, streamers and others have been rumoring it, and this has never come to fruition. So anything is possible. Blizzard could decline or confirm. That would either clear things up or make things more murky. But they will only say, quote, we don't comment on rumors or speculation. But I, for one, hold out hope. You guys, thanks for listening to The Daily Blip today. If you'd like to submit stories, your thoughts, your comments, your feedback, send them to scott@frogpants.com. And I'll see you guys tomorrow. Right here on The Daily Blip. This is Scott Johnson, and welcome to The Daily Blip. guys, Nathan Drake is not going to appear in Uncharted: The Lost Legacy. He's had enough. He's tired. Give the poor guy a break. What do you want? Nolan North just drag himself to the recording studio again and crank out yet another bunch of dialogue, yells and screams and falling sounds for poor Nathan? Anyway, this is the upcoming Uncharted side story. The stars Chloe Frazier and Nadine Ross. And there will not be an appearance by the normal protagonist of the series, Nathan Drake, at all. This is according to the official PlayStation blog. Quote, "We're not going to touch on Nathan Drake in this at all," says Kurt, game director of The Lost Legacy. Anyway, that approach probably makes sense for this. Developer Naughty Dog is pitching this as a standalone game in the Uncharted universe. You know what that means. You don't have to own Uncharted 4 in order to buy this thing or get this thing. I assume you're going to still have to pay for it. But it's going to focus on Chloe's own treasure hunt, her search for an Indian artifact called the Tusk of Ganesh. And she enlists the help of Nadine, who is recently unemployed. I guess her mercenary company called Shoreline, that was featured a little bit in 4, has gone belly up after the events of A Thief's End, which is unfortunate for everyone. Poor Nathan Drake. Not even in his own game. Aww. Bethesda is talking about Quake Champions again. Of course they are. You guys excited about Quake Champions? I mean, look, I'm not here to tell you that some of the best hours I ever spent in video games were in Quake 1 and Quake 2, but I guess I'll go ahead and tell you that. That's the truth. I played a whole lot of those games. And we're getting close to the closed beta. That's in a few weeks, they say. And they're going to have a tournament that'll take place at this year's QuakeCon. And what Bethesda is hoping for is a large esports presence for their game. This according to a conversation they recently had with Russian gaming site Good Game. And id Software's creative director Tim Willits, who has been with the company since the Doom days, said Bethesda is, quote, committed to establishing a large esports presence with the upcoming online arena shooter Quake Champions. He also confirmed and said the game is scheduled to enter a closed beta test in the next couple of weeks. And I guess if you buy the Champions Pack, the all-in-one purchase option, revealed a couple of weeks ago, this will include access to all champions in the future of the game. So it's going to work like Overwatch, is the plan there. Willits says the new team-based game mode called Sacrifice is being developed with a specific focus on helping Quake Champions find a place in the pro esports scene. They also have a dual mode, sort of a do-or-die competition. They say that no other game is doing that right. So we don't know much about that other than that. He goes on to say, "We are committed to having a large esports presence, and we want to make the game that is esports friendly, spectacular, with different spectating features, and we want to have game modes that are esports friendly. We feel, after talking to a lot of pro players, that the one versus one dual mode is something that is missing from first-person esports scenes these days." And he's right. Not since Quake and maybe Unreal has that been a thing, at least in the way that it is. Goes on to talk about the cost of the business plan. He says, if you're buying a Champions Pack in the very beginning, you are getting all the champions already released for the game. I think that probably means they may charge for new stuff in the future, so I don't know why people are confusing the two. Unless I'm reading that wrong, they could still charge you, is all I'm saying. Google Translate converted the response to, yes, a full package means full access to the current set of champions and to all future, period. All right, well, soon enough, Bethesda and certainly Willits will be talking in English. The current plan for QuakeCon this year is August 24th through 27th at the Gaylord Texas Resort and Convention Center in Texas. And if you haven't already signed up for the closed beta, you can do so at quake.bethesda.net. Get your Quake on, son! Listen, VR, right? Virtual reality, it's a big deal. I mean, who are we kidding here? It's a huge deal. I mean, it's not a huge, huge deal, or else sales numbers would probably be a little better. The rumors are that the sales numbers for Vive and Oculus aren't all that great. And I don't think we have anything more than estimates on those because the companies won't release the numbers. I could be wrong on the Valve side, on the HTC side, but I'm pretty sure we don't really know the total number of units sold for Oculus. PlayStation announced that they had over 2 million, but look, PlayStation has a certain advantage in this particular fight. They have an install base of consoles, tons of them, millions and millions of them. It's a very successful console. And if you take all those PS4s and PS4 Pros, and only a small percentage of them buy VR headsets, well, that's still a pretty successful number, because again, you have a dedicated hardware base, no one had to buy a new computer to make this work. But even that feels small to me. I think the numbers could be certainly better. Well, there is a university in Britain who's betting on that. And that's kind of exciting. Right? I mean, education, right? That's where the future is. I feel like I'm not explaining that very well. But hey, education's important. Kingston University. This is a public research university located in London. They've spent 53,000 or what is that in U? That's pounds. What is it in U.S.? Probably 60-something, $66,000, something like that. They have created a Center for Augmented and Virtual Reality Environments, or CAVE for short. The new facility is a state-of-the-art workspace designed to help give their students an edge in entering the video game industry. The CAVE boasts an arsenal suited to help Kingston students understand the AR/VR space. That includes current headsets that are on the market, equipment that tracks eye movements and brain activity to monitor how people are playing and enjoying each game. So it's not just, hey, let's go play. It's, they're studying what they're seeing, I guess. Dr. Vesnu Bruick, or Kektrick, I know I'm not saying that right, head of the School of Computer Science and Mathematics, says, "We are breaking the mold with this high-spec collaborative learning environment," unquote. Having games programming students working with design students on various aspects of a project is exactly how the digital media industry works. It's that level of interdisciplinary work and the exchange of views that will broaden the horizons for each and every one of them and help them make sure they are industry ready, unquote. They think it's important that they keep pace with what's happening with VR. And you might agree. I don't know. Do you? You guys should email me, scott@frogpants.com. Let me know what you think of the state of VR. It feels like things are a little bit weird right now. Just a little tiny bit off. Just a little bit not quite what they had promised. Right? The fidelity's there in a lot of cases. The games aren't necessarily, and there's no real killer apps yet. Or am I missing one? Tell me, scott@frogpants.com, and tell me which one you think I'm missing. What game, what app, mostly what game for the purposes of this show, but what am I missing? Because it sure doesn't feel like it. The closest I've come to seeing something as a, I don't know, as a killer app are art tools and things like that, and I don't think that's what they mean. What is the must-have VR experience? Does it even exist yet? And can it exist? And if you consider the relatively small user base, can something like that be developed in a reasonable amount of time by a reasonable sized team for a budget that won't kill them because they are only guaranteed a certain percentage of sales of an already small install base? I find these questions about our VR future to be fascinating. So I'd like to get your feedback as well. Again, scott@frogpants.com. You need more Pokemon in your life. That's what the Pokemon developer is saying. Of course they are. They want to sell more Pokemon games. I cannot imagine that this staffing up that's happening at the company is for anything other than a Switch-based Pokemon game. The initial surprisingly high sales and doubling of production of the Nintendo Switch are probably good indicators of what's going on here. The developer Game Freak is hiring. So if you want to get a job, I suppose, and you live in Japan, you're all set. But their work includes Pokemon Sun and Moon. These both came out to a lot of critical acclaim. Players seem to like them as well. And they have something codenamed Pokemon Stars in the works for the Nintendo Switch. This is not confirmed. It is all rumor at this point. But the positions are real. They got recently added to their recruiting website. And, I don't know. It's conspicuous for a number of reasons. They need a new title character modeler to create deformed, toon-like person, monsters, or item models. That's a quote. Says the applicant will do well if they have experience with Wii U or PlayStation Vita development. Again, sounds very switchy, does it not? Second opening is for a character designer. That was also posted online. And that one says, an opportunity to be involved in a development of the worldwide popular RPG. Does not say what. Since it is a title that has been released for a long time, the development environment is also very well set, unquote. Anyway, these have contracts that it looks like they're scheduled to end May of 2018. So now is the time, and Game Freak is the place. And the bottom line for you is, I mean, let's melt down this metal and see what it makes. A big puddle of yes, you're getting a brand new Pokemon game coming to the Switch. I would eat my hat if that wasn't true. Of course this is true. We always knew this was going to happen. You guys, don't forget to like the show and share it with your friends. And get the app if you're not using it. If you're checking this out via the web, that's great and all. But I highly recommend the iOS and Android version of the Anchor app. Such a great way to check out this and other great content. So go check that out today. All right? Anchor app, Android and iOS. Get it now. See you guys tomorrow. Hello, everyone. This is the Daily Blip. Got some bad news for Sony fans. Well, I don't know if it's that bad of news. Most of us aren't probably even using them anymore, but Sony's planning to halt production of the PlayStation 3 very soon in Japan. I assume that means we're going to see less here as well. Did you even know you could go out and get a PlayStation 3? All you guys with your PlayStation 4s, did you know this? Well, it's true. They're still producing PS3 units 10 years and more than 80 million units later. Multi-consumer product manufacturer Sony is reportedly pulling the plug on all production of the PlayStation 3. This is all according to a Japanese gaming site called GamesTalk. I'm not surprised. It was time for it to go. Do you remember the original initial release for the PlayStation 3? There was some trouble. It wasn't easy sailing, man. Kind of a rocky launch and didn't sell too well and was way too expensive. And in the light of 360 and its entrenchment and other stuff, it wasn't looking good. They made up for it, though. Seemed to do okay 10 years later. 80 million units is a lot. But if you already have a PS3, then I guess you're enjoying it. I guess if you're still using a PS3, I guess you're enjoying that too. But you're not going to be able to buy a new one. And it's okay. Just let it go. Let it go. And go get a PS4. That's what you should be doing. I'll talk to you guys in a bit. Red Dead Redemption is my favorite video game of the last generation. Of the entire 360, PS3, Wii era, there was no game I liked more than Red Dead Redemption. And I'm so happy for Red Dead Redemption 2. We're all happy, right? We're stoked. But I've got some good news for everybody in the meantime, while you're waiting for that. Red Dead Redemption is being modded into Grand Theft Auto 5. That's right, getting a new lease on life due to that game. A group of fans led by developer Mr. Lucianware, they're modding the game's full map into a GTA 5 mod on PC only, by the way. This isn't going to run on consoles. The team is currently developing the map, creating visuals, textures, games, day-to-night cycle, all that stuff. I mean, they really are looking to do kind of a full conversion of the game. Quote, we're looking for programmers who are able to help us reverse engineer the file formats. We're also looking for scripters who are able to remake any of the game's original content over to GTA 5. Think minigames and certain mechanics such as dead-eye targeting, etc. This is a post on their website. All right, I'm in. Grand Theft Auto, coming soon to a PC near you, at least until Grand Theft, or not Grand Theft Auto, Red Dead. Until the other, until next time, we'll see you soon. Great news, fans of Overwatch. If you're within the sound of my voice, today is your day. I'm assuming you're excited about this. I am, but I'm never going to say this name right. Orisa. Or is it Orisa? Everyone tells me it's Orisa. Anyway, she'll be available. Not in competitive play yet, by the way. But in quick play and all other things that matter in the game, you can now play Orisa going live today in Overwatch. Did I not mention it was Overwatch? Anyway, that's on the public servers. Been all week on the PTR. Players on the PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC will all get to play her. Competitive play will come later. But arcade versus AI, quick match, all that stuff, you're good to go. She is a tank-class character centered mainly on protecting her team. And her weapon is called the Fusion Driver, an automatic cannon that deals constant damage but slows her movement speed. Sounds a little like D.Va. You know, the way that works. I have not actually played with her on the PTR, but I've heard nothing but good things. Anyway, she's already been tweaked once. Her weapon damage and ultimate both got nerfed. So if you were used to what you were getting on the PTR, I got some sour news for you. You may not be thrilled about some of those changes. Anyway, she's been on there since March 20th. March 20th. That's today. Today's the day the Lucio changes go on the PTR. So PTR, still reason to be checking out the PTR. So get excited, guys. Orisa, out now. I like to tell you guys about games I'm playing occasionally on various platforms. Once in a while, a mobile game's going to sneak in there. If you followed me at all in the last couple of years, you'll know that one of my favorite portable games, mobile games, in the past couple of years has been a game called Card Crawl, which is a fantastic sort of take on solitaire and dungeon crawling and roguelikiness. I loved it. I still love it. It's worth getting. If you have an iOS or Android device, there's no reason you shouldn't get it. It's a premium title, which means, I think, $2.99 or something for that original game. Wonderful game. And we got word, 6 months ago that the developer was working on a new game that was not a sequel per se, or not even the same gameplay, but kind of, you know, in the same realm. It dealt with cards. It was going to be called Card Thief, and it would focus on stealth-based mechanics. But nobody knew much else, except we were all excited. It was going to be a day one purchase, not even thinking about it, no-brainer for me. Well, I'm happy to report it finally came out, at least on iOS. Android version is coming, I believe. It looks like beta stuff is happening, but iOS, as often is the case, gets it first. And I really, really like it. The graphic style is like Darkest Dungeon, sort of. Kind of carved-looking art. Sort of hard to explain. The animation on the cards is wonderful. The old game didn't have this sort of animation. This has real-time animations that indicate light and dark situations. You're trying to sneak your thief card past a bunch of guards, pick up gold, steal the treasure, and then get out successfully without being seen or thrown in jail. And the loop is incredibly addicting and really, really fun. There's a lot to it, though. It's hard for me to explain it here. But I'll just say it this way. Do you like tactical, turn-based sort of card ideas and games like that? Oh, you do you? Well, good, because Card Thief is for you. And has great tutorials, so it's not going to leave you hanging. It'll help you walk yourself through it, so you'll know what's going on. It is an absolute no-brainer at $1.99. And if you think that's expensive, then whatever. Go play your free-to-play games. But I want to pay developers for good work, and $1.99 seems like a screaming steal to me. It is easily, currently, my favorite new iOS game of 2017. If they were to take a vote today, Card Thief wins. Great sound, great music, great atmosphere, great gameplay, tons to unlock. It's there for the taking, so go check it out. And again, coming to Android soon. Don't forget to like this channel and favorite this episode and share it with your friends. And if you don't have the app already, get off the web and get the app. Get the Anchor app on iOS and Android, available now. And come back and check out what we got for you tomorrow as well. This is Scott Johnson saying, email me, scott@frogpants.com. And we'll see you later. Hey guys, welcome to the Daily Blip. I got some great news. This is Scott Johnson, by the way. Fallout 4 VR is coming to E3 2017, and according to them, Pete Hines anyway, it will blow your mind. That's a direct quote. It's going to be interesting. Bethesda confirmed that they're going to have this thing playable on the show floor at E3. And don't forget, this is the year that we get public access to E3. And for the first time ever, people, I guess, can come and give each other pink eye on Fallout 4's VR headsets. Pete Hines says he does not play VR games himself because he gets really motion sick, but he believes that Todd Howard and crew have come up with the best sort of mind-blowing thing ever in a VR situation. If you like Fallout, I guess you probably want to be pretty excited about this. This is the quote. Fallout 4's VR mode is the most incredible thing you've ever seen in your life. You can't even imagine what it's like playing in VR and how realistic it looks. And everywhere you turn your head, it's going to blow your mind. It is the craziest thing you've ever seen. It is slated to be released in 2017 on PC for HTC Vive, although no other versions have been announced, such as Oculus Rift or VR from PlayStation. However, one would think there are ways to make the Oculus work. Let's put it that way. So it'll probably work. Also in the interview, Hines said he is optimistic that VR will grow in popularity, though he does not foresee it ever completely taking over and replacing traditional gaming. I think I agree with him. He says, personally, I do not believe it is ever going to be a thing everywhere. It will not be a thing like, oh, I don't play other things, I only play VR, unquote. Anyway, he says it will grow and expand in popularity, but it does not think anybody should be shutting down their traditional gaming plans anytime soon. It makes sense to me. Anyway, look forward to E3 if you're going. Get your Fallout 4 VR on. Get ready to share diseases with everybody else on the floor. We'll see you guys later. In the world of Nintendo, I got some news for you about the Switch. Nintendo Switch reportedly back in stock at GameStop stores, at least some of them. So it's time to call your local GameStop. If you did not get it on the first run, maybe this is your big chance. I got mine in the mail from GameStop, but I got that at launch day, and it's been pretty scarce there and everywhere else since. But according to GameStop, earlier this week, they said they've received a new shipment of Nintendo Switch systems, which would make them available starting Wednesday, March 22nd. Guess what? That's today. And it looks like some other stores have already started to sell them early. As you might imagine, that would happen. There were a bunch of people on NeoGAF that reported their local stores received 10 units each and that they're being sold right now. This was in Houston, Texas specifically, at least one that was confirmed. But you're going to want to talk to your local GameStop about stock and availability. And look, if you're willing to part with your gaming hardware, you could still get one below the $300 price point. GameStop is paying $150 for in-store credit for a Wii U or a 3DS, $175 for an Xbox One, or $200 for a PlayStation 4. That seems high on the PS4, doesn't it? A little bit. I mean, I know it's the biggest platform right now, but that seems high to me. Anyway, whatever. So you could possibly get the hybrid console for like $100, $150. That's not bad. I kind of wish I would have done this with my Wii U because I don't think I'm going to play it anymore. I think I'm done. According to GameStop, Nintendo Switch sales have been phenomenal. In fact, sales are so strong that the new system could outpace the Wii in terms of sales at GameStop, says officials at GameStop. Demand for the Nintendo Switch has been high. Nintendo is doubling, as I mentioned before a couple days ago, doubling production. So, look for more of those and look for better numbers than the current 2 million in sales they've already had. Well done, Nintendo. I guess well done, GameStop. And well done, you, if you finally are able to get yours. Go get it today and grab Zelda while you're at it. A new Horizon Zero Dawn update. I really do hate the name of that game. We haven't talked about this. The game's beautiful. It's really fun. It's probably right up there in my top three games of the year. It's really incredible. But that name is dumb. Horizon:Zero Dawn. You could have had a trillion other better names than that for this game. But anyway, whatever. Horizon Zero Dawn update is out now, today. Here is everything it does. I'm not sure this is everything it does, but there's a good list here. This new patch is out and available now. Introduces a bunch of bug fixes and some adjustments to gameplay. In terms of new features, the patch adds an option to buy multiple items from merchants by pressing and holding X. So that's cool. You can also invert your X axis from the controls tab for those who are interested in... For all those psychos who do that in their video games. I mean, no offense, but y'all are weird. But it's in there. If you want the option, it's in there. As for many adjustments, there's a bunch of other stuff. We'll call these minor tweaks. The drop rate and distribution of items changed a little bit. And there have been a few changes from humanoid to machine AI, they're calling it. That's actually in the show notes. In both cases, developer Guerrilla Games did not share the specifics regarding what they changed and why. So this isn't quite like a World of Warcraft patch where you have miles of information. And what else? Another, a couple other issues. There were some crashes. Supposed to fix those. It clears out some problems that would prevent players from progressing. That's gone. Some people, I guess, got stuck in bunkers and cauldrons after completing the Face the Extinction quest. If that was happening to you, well, you're probably already pissed and maybe started over or had an earlier save or something. But that's fixed now. And yeah. They've warned fans on Twitter to patch 1.10 introduces a new issue where players can purchase outfits and or weapons they already own. They're going to fix this in an upcoming patch, but just be mindful of what you've already got before you throw down cash or whatever the money is in that game on anything new. Anyway, Horizon Zero Dawn, PlayStation 4, 2.6 million copies in its first 2 weeks. That's more than the Switch sold. Not too bad. I mean, the device is in, what, 40 million homes or something? So it could maybe be a little better, but that's one of the most successful first-party games ever, which we've already talked about at length, so I don't need to retell you that here. But anyway, go update your game. Have some more fun. Kill stuff with arrows. And live the life on the edge. That is Horizon:Zero Dawn, the dumbest name of the year. Are you playing Mass Effect Andromeda? Are you enjoying it? Because I hear it's okay. I hear it's not great. It's certainly not as good as 2. Maybe not even as good as 1 or 3. But, you know, the word on the street is game's got some issues. Certainly some pacing issues early on. But I would argue that Dragon Age... what was the latest Dragon Age? Dragon Age... don't remember the name. Anyway, the latest Dragon Age game was very slow in the beginning. And things picked up a little later. So, BioWare... not necessarily, at least recently, known for their speedy approach to your initial time in the game. But anyway, they've released some additional information. I'm not here to talk about that game. I'm not even playing it. But I will tell you this. Andromeda, its microtransaction pricing model has been revealed. And you can buy points bundles starting at $5. I hate this stuff. But like many other AAA games, BioWare is doing little microtransactions on the back end of a game and on your experience in that game. For its multiplayer mode specifically, this was also true of 3. I don't think it was in 2, but I don't remember that for sure. Anyway, it's in the wild, and the price for its virtual currency, like I mentioned before, is these prize packs or these point packs. So for the space point you want to purchase, you're looking at 500 points for $5, 1,050 points for 10, 2,150 points for 20. You can get 3,250 points for 30, and for $50, 5,750. And if you're an insane person, you can pay $100 US and nab yourself 12,000 points. Now, what the difference is between this and a freaking free-to-play freemium phone game, I don't know, except that you pay $59 to get started, and it kind of bums me out. It's out now on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. Various websites have reviewed it. GameSpot, specifically, is a 6 out of 10. That's about what I'm seeing. Kind of average stuff going on. Nobody hates it. Nobody loves it. It's just kind of there. And that's depressing me. But hey, if you're way into it and that multiplayer's scratching your itch, is that a thing it can do? Good news, because you can go buy some points. Buy some space points. Do it today! Hey everybody, welcome to the Daily Blip. I'm Scott Johnson, and I don't know about you guys, but all this talk about Switch issues, like people buying the Switch and having problems with it, it seems to have spawned a bit of a cottage industry around it. The, you might call them, industrious community around Etsy. They see an opportunity and they fill it. For example, they made the Dock Sock, which makes it so that when you slip your unprotected Switch into the dock, it won't scratch on those two bars that are down there, because they put this thin little sock, and they're using art from like Nintendo games. It seems pretty smart, but when Nintendo has a goof, that's what happens. The community tends to arrive and fix things. It's a real cottage industry being spawned right now, and if you want to get the sock, you can get it. You just go search for the Nintendo Switch Sock Dock or Dock Sock on Etsy. It's $15. Got one here with a big L for Luigi. It's a green one. They have a bunch of choices. You get 4 pages of hits, in fact. Someone else is making a Kirby one. And there's a little price war going on. Anyway, I guess that's better than nothing, but I wish Nintendo would directly address this or something, because that plastic scratch is super easy, and even I'm starting to see it, and I've been very careful. They're also talking openly now about the Joy-Con issues, saying that they're now fixed. They blamed it on a manufacturing variation, they said, was to blame for the loss of connection of the various Joy-Cons. I've yet to have this happen, but I've been using mostly a Pro Controller, so I don't think I'm the right guy to ask. But they say they've had no widespread technical problems with the Switch, and that only there were some Joy-Con controllers in early production that have this flaw. They can be easily repaired if you send them to Nintendo, and any new ones you'd get will not have the flaw. That is at least what they're saying. So there you go. That sounds like Nintendo covering their tracks to me a little bit. I'll be back later with more, so hang in there, everybody. Well, hello there, everybody, and welcome back. I've got a review of sorts. It's early, though. Not only is it an early review, but it's an early access game on Steam, so it's not even done itself. There's a lot still coming. They've been updating it, changing it, tweaking it. It caught my eye the other day because all you have to do is say, Scott, there's a new roguelike game out. And I go, oh, do tell. Tell me more. Kind of just the way it is with me. And I can't seem to get enough of roguelikes. And there are certainly plenty of them on Steam, ranging from awesome to maybe they could do it better next time, sort of. But the game is called Streets of Rogue. reminiscent of Streets of Rage, except not really. It doesn't really play like Streets of Rage, but it's called Streets of Rogue. I'm sure that it's playing on our memory of Streets of Rage for the Genesis. Streets of Rage 2 was awesome, by the way. Anyway, I might actually really quite like this. Here are some of the things that it's about. So there are random levels and goals and quests. Picture a big top-down sort of city. You beam into the city or you elevator into the city, and then it says, all right, you got to go kill this dude. You got to find this stuff. You got to get this key, and then you got to get out. And the stuff you have to do is always different. And the buildings you break into are either as simple as a door to open, or you got to blow it up with a timed explosive. Sometimes you got to bat something down. Sometimes you got to knock on the door, and the guy's got to come answer it, and then you kill that dude or whatever. Think of it as like little micro GTA jobs that you would do in a GTA game. But not big, complicated quests or anything. It's just like, you've got to break into the safe, get the papers that are in there, and then get out of there sort of stuff. And it's different every time you play it. And every time you die, you can buy some traits and unlock characters in the sort of hub space and keep going out and doing it more. And I really like that. Those upgrades are permanent, like you'd expect in a roguelike like this. And it's unlockable characters and traits. I mentioned that. And I don't like the character art. I'm just going to throw that out there. If I got a complaint, the character art kind of sucks. It's not my style at all. It's all kind of flat and boring, and I don't like it. Other than that, the world's fine. It is meant to look like an old, you know, 2D 8-bit game or something. The guns and the weapons feel really good. And it's under $15. This is a early access game without bugs that I can tell, so, you know, any that are obvious, no game breakers. So if you're looking for a good time and you like a good roguelike, I think you can do pretty well with Streets of Rogue. And they're already showing a lot of interest in keeping it up. I do wish the characters looked different, but hey, gameplay's where it counts, right? I'm not going to complain too much about that. That's Streets of Rogue, available on Steam now. Scott gives it an enthusiastic double toe in the air. I don't have a good rating system. Gives it 2 chicken chalupas. Gives it 3 stars on your forehead. See you guys later. Oh, the Battlefront games. I have this mixed experience with Battlefront, Star Wars Battlefront. The original game I thought was pretty rad. I didn't think the next one was all that great. 3 got canceled. Star Wars Battlefront, that ended up happening in what, 2014? 2015, was it? Crap, I don't remember. But anyway, I've got good news if you liked all that stuff. Star Wars Battlefront and new Need for Speed games will be playable at EA's E3 event. You're also going to get the return of NBA Live there as well. So if you missed the venerable basketball franchise from Electronic Arts, then get excited. Anyway, most notably, it's the new Star Wars Battlefront. Need for Speed took a bit of a break as well, but that's on its way back. And according to the quotes from EA, they said it has more features in depth than the 2015 reboot, as well as a single-player campaign. That will be very welcome, a single-player campaign, I should say. One would assume that they'll include a bunch of Rogue One stuff and maybe other connected tissue in the Star Wars universe to make it all that much better. If that's not your thing, you can also play NFL 18, Madden, of course, FIFA 18. Madden is the NFL game. FIFA 18, most notably, given the series' prolonged absence, the NBA Live 18. Where's NHL? They did say that the NHL game and their UFC game are in development, but we don't know much about that. We also know that a new BioWare game will be out by the end of March, and we don't know what that is either. Could be new Dragon Age, could be something completely new and different on the heels of mediocre reviews for Andromeda. It seems like maybe they could use a win. Actually, EA in general could use a win. Things aren't going that great for those guys. I feel like I'm not interested in too many EA games lately. So I'm not jumping at them, right? Are you? Are you getting excited about EA games anymore? I don't have a thing, you know, I don't have any reason not to want good content out of EA. I just feel like they're getting their lunch handed to them by Ubisoft and Blizzard and to some degree Activision and others. I just feel like they're not up to speed. So maybe this will put them back on track. E3, shaping up to be interesting. Maybe I'll see you there. So a couple of final, a little double dose for you here at the end of the end of the day's postings here on Anchor. By the way, make sure you go grab the app Anchor for iOS and Android. And favorite the channel. Share the episodes. Echo them. It's kind of like a retweet sort of idea on the service is echoing. So if you like what you're hearing here, do it. And if at the very least, just favorite it. Let them know that you like what I'm up to. That's the Anchor app. You can find that anywhere that you get your apps. Destiny 2 poster put a release date in September. This is a bit of a leak. It's a retail poster meant for some wall somewhere. It indicates both a beta incoming and a release date for Destiny 2, or at least a release month. They have it as... actually, they have a specific date. I didn't realize that. They have it as September 8th. And there are two different posters. They're both with Italian text. These were not meant to have photos taken of them, I do not believe. They show three Guardians beside a Destiny 2 logo. It's the word Destiny with a giant 2 behind it. And on the gaming website Lega, the other one showed up on Imgur, which Imgur often gets this kind of stuff out of nowhere. Anyway, they did say that there was going to be a Destiny sequel. This wasn't news, but we didn't have any idea of like a release date or anything like that. I need Destiny 2 to be way better than Destiny 1. I also would really like Destiny 2 to be on PCs. Could they just work that out? Could that be a thing they do? Anyway, from their earnings call Q&A, they said the Destiny sequel have a great cast of memorable and relatable characters as well as a cinematic storyline and be more accessible for someone who wants a great, more casual first-person experience. I know what fans are going to think of that kind of talk. Lastly today, The Elder Scrolls Legends is now out on iPad. Happened already on PC, but now it's on iPad. It is coming to Android tablets and a Mac as well as, I guess, other smartphones. That doesn't say what that means here, other smartphones. But, I mean, what are they? What other ones are you making this for? The Windows Phone? Is that even being made anymore? Anyway, Legends is a Bethesda Softworks strategy card game based on its Elder Scrolls games. It is a free-to-play game, much like Hearthstone and others in the competition. Requires iOS 10 or higher on the iPad 4 or newer. And again, it'll be on Android next month, macOS in May, and iOS and Android phones this summer. But that must be what they mean by phones. And the game first released on Windows PC on March 9th, so it's actually been out for a while. I meant to like grab this right away and give it a shot, and I forgot completely about it. And I don't even know what people think of it. Is it good? Is it okay? I want to give it a shot. So actually today I'm gonna give it a shot. I'm going to play it today. I'd love to have your feedback though. Scott at frogpants.com. Do you like Elder Scrolls Legends? Has it treated you well? Am I wasting my time or should I give it a go? I like the Elder Scrolls world. I like Elder Scrolls Online. I like Skyrim and every Elder Scrolls game ever made. It's a pretty rich universe. Seems like a good place to make a good card game. It's going to do it. Don't forget the Anchor app. Get it. Check it out. Thanks so much. I'm on Twitter at Scott Johnson. You can give me feedback there as well. And I hope you guys have a fantastic day. We'll be back tomorrow with a bunch of new stories, some other stuff to talk about. I'll see you then.